Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. Sorry about the little delay, guys. We just had to finish getting set up. Anyways, we got a big show today. And so it was something that just dropped that I saw and I wanted to make mention of. So there's a little film coming out in July. I think it's going to be the biggest movie this summer, and it's coming out right at the right time. And that is Mission Impossible. So this is a brand new poster that just dropped today from the Twitter of Mission Impossible. And it looks unbelievable. I can't wait for this movie. There's so many different things swirling around this. This is the stunt. Okay. So he's jumping off. This is the actual final shot of him. This still is amazing, taking off from on the motorcycle. Anybody who has seen the Paramount/Skydance behind the scenes stuff, it's about 9 minutes. It's amazing. And Tom Cruise just outdoes himself over and over and over again. And that's why I keep saying he is the last movie star we have. You know, it's amazing what he does at his age. But yeah, so like I said, this is the poster. I was hosting a space the other night, and Jeremy Fowler, the Rap, was in there, and we had a couple others. And we were actually talking about some of the things we liked and didn't like about the Oscars. And one of the things I had pointed out is that Warner Brothers had done their little, had their little 100 years. Disney introduced another little spot, if you will, or about 40-second spot of The Little Mermaid. And I was saying, I was shocked flabbergasted, frankly, that Mission Impossible didn't have a spot there. Because let's face it, anybody who watched the Super Bowl, as millions of people did, it didn't premiere there. And look, I get why they could very easily, they didn't want to do it there. Because at the same time, it was, okay, we have too many other movies we're going up against. We've got Guardians to contend with. We've got The Flash. We've got all of these other movies. You know, Transformers. And I think it would probably get overlooked. Okay, fine. That's fine. So, as I said, the Oscars are the biggest night of the year. And millions of people are going to watch it. Well, now, while some of the awards were predetermined, right? Like Best Supporting Actor and Best Visual Effects, there were a couple there that were really hotly contested. And I said to Jeremy, I said, I'm shocked that they did not release a trailer. And subsequently the next day, right after the space, you know, the next day, 24 hours later, they dropped this, you know, poster. It was funny because Destiny Jackson of Deadline, who I follow and she follows me, at least I hope she does. I think she does. But in any event, she said, you know, Tom must have been listening to you because, you know, of course, they ended up dropping this trailer. But this leads me to believe, and mind you, I have no inside knowledge on this. This leads me to believe that they're going to be dropping a trailer very, very soon because they can drop it anytime they want. The internet will crash. The other thing I brought up to Jeremy, okay, and others was this, that you got to understand, this is like the final, I mean, this is part one of the final movie, you know, that Tom Cruise is going to be doing for Mission Impossible. I mean, when you think of like Infinity War to Endgame and, you know, Mockingjay to, you know, Mockingjay Part 2 and Harry Potter. I mean, there's a couple of films franchises out there that have done like two-parters. The other thing, too, is I said, we have CinemaCon right around the corner. It's in about a month. I wouldn't be shocked or surprised because we have a couple of films that are going to be at CinemaCon, namely The Flash. Okay. I wouldn't be shocked to see this drop and get an exclusive, even if it's not the full film, like a 10-minute snippet of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. Because I think Paramount, this is one of their biggest, if not their biggest, film of this year. And it would behoove them not to at least tell theaters, okay, that's what the whole thing about CinemaCon is. They're showing theater, you know, owners, distributors, that all the distributors that are saying to the theaters, look, this is what we're going to bring you. I wouldn't be shocked to see Paramount put in like a 10-minute thing of this. It doesn't have to be the whole movie. But, you know, also, too, think about this. You had the success of Top Gun Maverick. So that's another thing to consider. I think that this would be huge, huge for Paramount if they went ahead and did something like this. And like I said, that 9-second behind the scenes is big. It's amazing. I mean, I still contend personally Tom Cruise is the last movie star we have today. I mean, he's you know, 62, 63 years old, does his own stunts. You know, I mean, he may not be the best actor in the world, okay? But you can't deny what he's done for the business. I mean, he's brought everybody feature films for the past 40 years. I mean, Risky Business just turned 40 this year. I mean, he did Taps and everything else in the early 80s, but everybody started to like him, not like him, but notice him in Risky Business in 1983. And then, you know, but what he's done and how he's done it and doing all of this stuff practical in Top Gun, I could go on and on and on for hours. The point is this. There's a new poster for Mission Impossible. I think this looks amazing. And it's really... He's solidified himself as, I think, one of the best actors of all time, even if he doesn't have an Oscar to boot for it. And so I think that's going to be an amazing film, and it's coming out at the right time, right in the middle of June, or July, rather, right in front of Oppenheimer, too, in Barbie. So that's something else to be considered, too. And if this movie is any good, which I suspect it's going to be, look out. Look out. Anyways, guys, what do you think about this? Had you seen the poster for Mission Impossible? Do you like Mission Impossible? Is this right up your alley, or is this something that you're not a fan of? Are you going to go see Mission Impossible? Which Mission Impossibles are your favorite? Tell me all that stuff in the comments down below, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, let's move on to the next story. So our first story of the day is about a movie that's going to be being released in the next week or two, and that is Shazam, Fury of the Gods. Now, this comes from Variety. And what they're saying is the projections of this film could be around $35 million. Shazam! Fury of the Gods is expected to take the box office crown from Scream 6 when the superhero sequel opens in theaters over the weekend. But don't expect Billy Batson or company to break any DC franchise records. The Shazam! Sequel is aiming to collect a $35 to $40 million take between Friday and Sunday based on early estimates. Unless the Warner Brothers film seriously crushes expectations, inaugural ticket sales will fall significantly short in its pre-pandemic predecessor. 2019 Shazam, the first film, which introduced the world to Zachary Levi's comic book character who became a hero by saying the magic word Shazam, opened to $53.5 million and ended its global run with $140 million domestic and $360 million globally. Like the original, the sequel cost $100 million to produce. There's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, of course, but it's significantly less than the recent DC installments like Black Adam and the Suicide Squad, which carried price tags of $185 and $200 million, and thus a lot more coinage to return a profit. For different reasons, The Suicide Squad was released simultaneously on HBO Max amidst the pandemic and was poorly received. Both of these films disappointed in the box office, their box office runs in comparison. By comparison, Black Adam opened to $67 million last October by tapping out with $168 million in North America and $392 million worldwide. There is one bright spot for DC, and there was one bright spot in those movies for releases. The Batman impressed with a $134 million debut last March, and ultimately $369 million domestically and $770 million globally. David F. Sandberg returned to direct Fury of the Gods, which centered on Zachary Levi's Billy Batson and his foster siblings, all who transformed into superheroes when they said Shazam, as they team up to fight the Daughters of Atlas, who will wield a weapon that could destroy the world. Rachel Ziegler, Adam Brody, Lucy Liu, and Helen Mirren co-star in the film. Reviews for the sequel are currently under embargo. Okay, so let's talk about this. I think that it's always difficult to make a sequel. Always. It doesn't matter what franchise you're doing it for or the story or anything else. Because people want something that's bigger and better and more impressive. Okay? Whether that is special effects or whether that is the story or whether that is the characters or anything else. I think that the fact that this is going to make $35 to $40 million is big. It's really big. Now, it didn't open to $53, okay, like the first Shazam did. But at the same time, you got to remember that was before the pandemic. So, I mean, that, and the other thing too is, don't forget about this. Besides the Batman, as it notes, besides the Batman, this DC is one of those franchises that's hit or miss, to say the least. And I think that when you have a franchise or a set of franchise films, like, you know, Warner Brothers does with their DCU, it's always going to be hit or miss. And it's one of those things where if this doesn't do well, then you have to question, okay, well, even if The Flash has Michael Keaton in it, how is The Flash going to do? And that's a whole other thing for another time. But you got to remember, too, that's opening right in the middle of June. And it's one of those things where you have Across the Spider-Verse coming out and you have Transformers coming out, and that's coming out in June. This is going to be a measuring stick or a litmus test for The Flash. Now we know it's going to make, well, roughly, we don't know, but estimates are between $35 to $40 million. I hope it gets good word of mouth. And I hope, I mean, Screen 6 is, you know, did really well this last weekend. And Creed 3 did really, really well the weekend before that. So I'll be curious to see, not so much the opening, okay? The two things I'm going to be looking for are this. Number one, what kind of drop does it go from the first to the second weekend? Because that's important. Usually you want, if it's an amazing drop, it's only 30 to 40%, okay? Average, okay, would probably be 40 to 50%. If it's really in trouble, you're going to see something 60 to 70, like Ant-Man. Ant-Man made $140 million its opening weekend and then dropped like a rock and dropped 70%. So it's all going to depend on what the second weekend does. And number two, it's still under embargo. So that's important too. You know, and that's a little, you know, I understand the film comes out next week, but it's still a little, or this weekend, but it's like, So, I mean, there could be a couple of other little nuggets there that you go, well, so I think DC needs a win. Let's put it like that. DC needs a win. And the fact is they have not been getting very many wins. Yes, the Batman was huge. Everybody was expecting the Batman to be huge. It made $130 million opening weekend. $770 total, you know, global. We'll see. I think that depending on how this does, and depending what the reviews are, okay, it could be okay for Warner Brothers, or it could be a disaster. I don't think there's a middle ground here. Because if it's okay, it will make somewhere in the neighborhood of like $20 million next week. Okay. If it's a disaster, and like an Ant-Man, this thing falls off a cliff, you're looking at like $15 million. And then you're in serious trouble. Because at that point, you've got to ask yourself, what is the Flash going to do? Right? Yes, it's going to be done, you know, premiered in CinemaCon. And yes, the buzz about it. And yes, it's arguably the second most anticipated film behind Mission Impossible. But how much is it? And it's in June, like I said. How much is it really going to make? I think that if it doesn't make, you know, a substantial amount of money opening weekend, they're going to have to hope and pray that this movie does well overseas. So it will be very, very fascinating. Anyways, guys, what do you think? Did you like the first Shazam? Did you see the first Shazam? Are you going to go see Fury of the Gods? Are you interested in this movie? Or is this one of the ones that you're going to pass on? You know, let me know what you think down in the comments and I'll get back to you. Okay, so let's move on. So our next story, okay, is about a film that is going to be coming out at the end of this year. And it's very interesting to see what people say about this, okay? And that is Killers of the Flower Moon. And the reason why this is important, okay, is because the costume designer, Jacqueline West, was at a masterclass, and she was talking about, she gave a shout out to Martin Scorsese, and she teased Dune, the sequel to Dune, in some details. So this comes from Deadline. Experienced film feature film heads of departments tend to be discreet about the productions they've worked on prior of the world premieres, out of respect for the directors, not to mention the NDAs. The Reverend and Dune Part 1 costume designer Jacqueline West could not resist giving a shout-out to Martin Scorsese's upcoming feature, Killers of the Flower Moon. However, at the end of the masterclass on Tuesday, she had a couple of comments. When the moderator, Richard Painter, the Columbia University professor of film studies, was about to move on to take questions from the floor, West interjected, requesting one last word on her career trajectory. After Dune Part 1, I had the most incredible experience of my film career. I went to work with Martin Scorsese. I can't talk about the film yet because nothing's been released, but I can just say it has a combination of someone I've always wanted to work with my absolute dream project. It's called Killers of the Flower Moon, and it was brilliantly done, not just on my part, but by everybody. So, quiz by Deadline after, on what compelled her to make the shout-out, Wes said, my husband said that I worked with Scorsese. Okay, now you can quit. That's the pinnacle. Oh, the book, and the book was totally captivating. Native cast was incredible in the acting. Liddy Gladstone is incredible. The images were thrilling. It looked amazing. I watched it all being shot, and I haven't seen any of it. Wes revealed that the film star Leonardo DiCaprio has seen it, however, and told her it was a masterpiece. I was talking to Leo about it. We had lunch before I came here, and he said, Jackie, I think we worked on a masterpiece. I thought for Leo to say that was something. He doesn't say that lightly. He's been in the business since he was a little boy. So she actually had gone on, who's close to DiCaprio since they worked together and since The Revenant. West is one of the most respected costume designers in the business, along scoring nominations for Philip Kaufman's Quills, David Fincher's A Curious Benjamin, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, The Revenant, and Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 1. So here she goes on to say about not only some more of The Killer of the Flower Moon, but Dune Part 2. Her comments further stoke anticipation about Scorsese's $200 million Apple-backed adaptation of David Grin's best-selling book about the serial murder of members of the oil-wealthy Osage Nation in the 1920s Oklahoma. Expectations are high that the film will premiere at Cannes in May, but West said whether, quote, Marty had released the film at the festival, end quote. West, during the masterclass, she talked about Denis Villeneuve's Part 2, which is now in post. She revealed that initially she had turned down Denis Villeneuve to work on it on the back of The Revenant. I said, I don't do sci-fi. It's not my thing. I said, no. He hired someone else. And I guess he was happy because he called my agent a second time and said, can I just talk to her? Mary Perrin, who produced The Revenant, was producing Dune, got me in the office and put me on FaceTime with him on a big screen. He was so compelling. I want you to do it because I don't want it to look like sci-fi. I want it to be classical. I don't want it to look like a video game. West revealed she had a personal connection with Dune's novels, linked to the fact that she lived on a houseboat close to the English writer and philosopher Anne Alan Watts, where Dune creator Frank Herbert would sometimes go to write. I'm showing my age. Our houseboat was about 30 feet away from Alan Watts' boat. He would give all weekend psychedelic parties. It was quite a sense back then in the Bay Area. West said Dune Part 2 is more labor intensive than Dune Part 1. We made a lot of costumes. In Part 2, you really dive in the world of Dune. We get to see what the Emperor's world would look like. We go to his planet. We spend a lot of time on Giddel Prime, the Harkonnen planet. We spend a lot of time in Stellar Stargan's world. It was brilliant. So he talking about Austin Butler, he was pretty fabulous in it. All the worlds get expanded. It was about creating three separate different worlds, also revisiting them. The age-old ones in these costumes that almost look like Egyptian mummies. I think it's visually stunning. The sets, the choreographing, and the concepts. So, okay, let's talk about this. Couple things. Number one, this is one of the most anticipated movies of this year. And it's all going to be all the way in November. November is going to be a packed month, by the way. Okay? You've got this. You've got The Marvels. And you have a couple of other films. I think one more Disney film. Nonetheless, this is interesting because to say it was more labor intensive than the original. Number two, the costumes were more intricate and we go to different worlds. So she's teasing that. I like the fact that I saw Dune in IMAX. So I had not. This is what I would call a second level type of movie. There is not only the main story, there's stories within the story. And I think that's important. And it's one of those things where, yeah, I think that this is going to be a great movie and how it's done. So I'm really looking forward to this. I was fascinated to hear what she had to say. And it's one of those things where I think that this is going to be a fun movie. And when I say fun, I don't mean like comedy or romantic comedy or haha funny. This is going to be a fun movie for those people that know of the movie. They've read the books. They are fans of the world. I think that we're going to see a lot of things that you didn't see in the first film. And don't forget, I mean, this photo doesn't really have it, but we have three new cast members coming. Okay. We have Florence Pugh. We have Austin Butler. And then we have somebody else. That's big. I mean, Austin Butler, of course, is riding high. I mean, even though he didn't win on Sunday, he's still one of the hottest actors, you know, in doing projects right now. Florence Pugh, I mean, starred in a Marvel movie with Scarlett Johansson, did a whole series on Disney Plus. You know, I think this is going to be a good, solid film. And to say that the choreographic, you know, the costumes and the choreography and everything else, that's it. That's interesting, which makes me wonder if this doesn't get some, because he got shut out last time. It would make me wonder if this Dune doesn't get 4, 5, maybe 6. No, I'm guessing. I have no inside knowledge. Why do I think it's just a guess? 4 or 5 or 6 nominations at the Oscars next year. I mean, it's all under the line, of course. We're talking about, you know, cinematography. We're talking about editing. We're talking about costume design. We're talking about things like that. So that would be interesting. I wouldn't even be shocked. This is a stretch because I highly doubt it's going to get any acting nominations. I wouldn't be shocked to see this actually get a Best Picture nomination. I know. But because it's one of those movies that the Academy kind of likes, right? It's a deep storytelling with enriched with everything else. Who knows? I definitely think though that's a stretch. That's a stretch. Anyways, what do you guys think about the comments of what she had to say? Are you interested in Dune 2? Did you see the first one? And if so, did you see it on streaming, or did you see it in IMAX, or did you see it in theaters when you had the chance first? Let me know what you think down in the comment section. Okay, so we go from one movie to another movie. I think that this is going to be interesting to see what happens with it. And so, according to Deadline, okay, Vanessa Hutchinson of Tick, Tick, Boom fame, and she, by the way, guys, I'm going to say it right now, if you have not seen Tick, Tick, Boom, go on Netflix tonight, watch Tick, Tick, Boom. I will say this before I start the story. I had heard about the film. I was like, okay. And I watched it. I never cried so hard in my life. It was amazing. And her performance was just so, so good. So she is going to be joining the cast for Bad Boys 4. Okay. And this is what it says. Vanessa Hutchinson is set to reprise her role as Kelly in Bad Boys 4 with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. Smith and Lawrence revealed earlier that they're going to be reteaming for a fourth Bad Boys movie, which is in pre-production at Sony for Bad Boys for Life director, with Bad Boys Life director, returning to helmet from a script by Chris Bremer. Plot details are being kept under wraps, but we hear the film will begin filming in the next few months. Before COVID shut everything down in March of 2020, the third Bad Boys for Life made $426 million at the global box office. With a domestic four-day take-home of $73 million, the picture notched us the second biggest Martin Luther King weekend ever. Although the Bad Boy franchise counts for $840 million dollars at the global box office. Jerry Bruckheimer, Smith, Westbrook, Doug Belgrade, and Chris Ullman are coming back, or back producing. Lawrence, James Lasseter, Mike Stanton, Billy Wildman, and John Monet are executive producers. And so basically that is the story. I gotta say, I'm happy. I'm really kind of. I saw Bad Boys for Life in theaters. Really, really liked it. It was fun. It was a fun movie. I can't wait for this to actually reboot or come back. I had actually, to be frank, I had actually forgotten she was in the third one. It totally, you know, totally blew my mind about that. So this is going to be good to have her back. I've always thought this franchise was interesting. I've always thought the franchise was interesting, and I think it's going to do well. I mean, I think that the franchise will do well. Like, I'm sorry, guys, I'm trying to do something as I do this, but yeah, seriously, I think the franchise is going to do well. I think it will be fine. I wouldn't be shocked to see this be in the summer in a couple years. And I think her coming back is a great addition. So we'll see what happens with that. Let me ask you guys this. Have you seen Bad Boys? Have you seen all of the Bad Boys? If so, which ones did you like the most? And which stars in the franchise did you like the most? Did you like Will Smith? Did you like Martin Lawrence? Was it Vanessa Hutchinson? Let me know all your thoughts down in the comment section. I'll get back to you. Okay, so we got one last story of the day. And I always like to end on a good note when I can. So, of course, this last Sunday was not only the Oscars, but it was The Last of Us. And The Last of Us brought us, anybody who's played the game knows, the ending, and, you know, it brought us a fantastic ending. But it's interesting to note how it was produced. And I say that because of this. They spent between $10 to $15 million an episode on this. And you can definitely tell where the money went. I have no complaints about that. So here's why I said this. The Last of Us used real trained giraffes in an abandoned hospital for the season finale. So here, this comes from Deadline. Sunday season finale of The Last of Us tackled the two videos. And by the way, I should say this. If you haven't watched this, there will be spoilers in this article. So, you know, if you want to watch it and then come back, and then that's fine. But I do not want to spoil this for anybody. Sunday season finale of The Last of Us tackled two of the video game's most famous scenes, the giraffe moment and the final hospital shootout. Joel shot his way through the Salt Lake City hospital as he upholds his commitment to Ellie to save her and chooses her life over the future of humanity. In the final moments of the episode, Joel decides to take Ellie away from the hospital where her immunity to the deadly cordyceps fungus couldn't provide a cure. But in performing the operation, she would have died. Amidst a hail of bullets from the fireflies, Joel makes her choice to take Ellie back to Jackson and massacres everyone in the hospital. Okay, so when it came to tackling the hospital design, production designer John Pano thought he would have to build the sets from scratch and accommodate the hallways in a hail of gunfire that would play out as Joel takes Ellie. It's not an Easter egg, per se. Showrunner Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann wanted to follow the game closely, with Joel going through the places and passages. Our task was to do that, but we ended up finding a desolate hospital outside the city of Calgary. He and his team went to the empty hospital, repainted it, and aged it. We wanted to make the same murals in the game when Joel gets to the pediatric wing that were there in the game. That tiny detail stays true to the game, and the team replicated as much as they could. Lighting was also a factor into consideration. He looked at where the electricity source would be coming from at a hospital. His idea was to use portable generators that were supplying power. I thought it'd be interesting to have a lot of work lights, the kind you'd find at a construction site, a string of lights. That setup would give a dark, moody vibe. Panel also brought in plastic barriers and placed them in the hallway. He said it was a nod to when the infected weren't inundating society, when people who had been bitten or sick were being brought in and isolated. We had to incorporate them in a bunch of places, but you could only see it once it was in the final cut. The giraffe scene that precured the hospital scene was derived from the game, and it was critical that the show this beloved moment. Similar to when Ellie was in the mall and seeing what life was like before the outbreak, the scene sees her and Joel have a beautiful bonding moment as she feeds a giraffe shortly after reaching Salt Lake City. The scene itself was a combination of visual effects, scenery, and a location shoot with real giraffes from the Calgary Zoo being used. Piano explains, I'm sure Alex Wayne, visual effects supervisor, could have made a CGI elephant if we had the time, but time was a factor. The scene with Joel and Ellie walking through a work site with Orange Sharp. So basically it goes into, I'm not going to finish the article, guys, because I don't want to bore you. However, it goes into how it was done. And I thought this was so critical. Because the thing is that every single gamer, including myself, wanted to see a live action game, right? I mean, this is what we hope for when it comes to video game adaptations. And the thing is, how they did it was remarkable. They actually trained real giraffes. And when you hear that they spent $10 to $15 million on per episode, you go, wow, okay. You see where the money went. That being said, there were four or five scenes I was really looking forward to. This was one of them. The hospital was one of them. But more importantly, that scene, you know, we had a couple weeks ago where Joel and Ellie were at Jackson and she, you know, she doesn't run away, but she's...
Ellie.
Is this really all they had to worry about? Boys, movies, deciding which shirt goes with which skirt. It's bizarre.
Listen,
why are you here?
I came here to talk to you.
No, why are you still here? If you're gonna ditch me, ditch me.
What exactly did you hear?
I have to leave her, you have to take her. You know, I stood up for you today because I thought...
I made this decision for your own good. You'll be way better off with Tommy. He knows the area better than I do.
Do you give a shit about me or not?
Of course I do.
Then what are you so afraid of? I'm not her, you know. Maria told me about Sarah and...
No. Don't say another word.
I'm sorry about your daughter, Joel. But I've lost people too.
You have no idea what loss is.
Everybody I have cared for has either died or left me. Everybody, fucking except for you! So don't tell me that I'd be safe with somebody else, because the truth is, I would just be more scared.
And this was a remarkable series. I think it's going to garner multiple Emmy nominations. I also think it's going to garner multiple Emmy wins for Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey. Now, I know this is early in the season. I get that. Okay. However, you can't deny what the viewership was. And I did a whole story on that viewership the other day. Okay. There was a little over 5 million people that tuned in for the premiere of this show. This last episode, 8.2 million. In the week of the Super Bowl, when it aired on a Friday, 10 million people. That's astounding. This Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann just hit a home run. And they're so, and they dropped Easter eggs the whole way through, too, which I loved. I can't begin to tell you how good this series was. I'm just, and actually, if you want to go back on the channel, Kyle actually sat down with Neil, I was going to say Neil Druckmann. It wasn't Neil Druckmann. It was editor Timothy Good. And he had about an hour and a half conversation with him talking about his career and The Last of Us and everything else. That's fantastic to check out. But yeah, hearing the story that they use real giraffes is remarkable. And I can't wait for the second season. And I am going to, The Last of Us Part 2 is going to be turning 3 at the end of June. I have an idea where I want to do a video about the 3rd year anniversary, about The Last of Us Part 2 and where this goes. I mean, we know Bella Ramsey is coming back. We know Pedro Pascal is coming back. We also know, anybody who's played the game, that you're going to get a lot of different things. They were going to split the second game up into 2 seasons because it is super, super, super long. But yeah, I this show is an amazing show, and I can't wait for this to come back. As a matter of fact, there were rumors out there, and they're not rumors anymore, that they were going to start filming the second part at the end of this year. And if that's the case, that's fantastic. I can't wait. Anyways, guys, what do you think about the story? Like, are you impressed that they used real giraffes? Did you watch the show? Are you a fan of the show? If so, did you watch all the episodes the night it dropped, or did you wait the next day? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments section. Okay, guys. So that's going to do it today. Another quality day with some really, really cool stories. And some stories that were, you know, we got, you know, the Shazam story, which, you know, is going to be coming out, and then Killers of the Flower Moon and all this good stuff. So stay tuned here to get some more great stories about Hollywood. And yeah, keep tuning back in as I know, you know, hit that like and subscribe button, guys, because this is the only way this gets out to the masses. And I'm trying to get this out to as many people as I can. We have, and it's the middle of the month, so I promised you guys 2 first reactions between now and then, and you will get them. One of them is going to be Fargo, and the other one is going to be, you know, another one of my choosing. And then we've got The Mandalorian tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. And, yeah, we got a bunch of, go check out our Perfect Movies. You know, we've done 3 of them so far. We did Silence of the Lambs. We did Captain America Winter Soldier. And this month we did Heat, the 1996 movie with Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, directed by Michael Mann. We got all that stuff coming up for you. The Roundup. Yeah, a bunch of stuff, guys. Just go check it out on the channel. You've got so much content there. And it's all free. You're not paying a dime for it. Okay, it's not like streaming where you got to pay a monthly fee. No. You're getting all this for free. And that's the biggest thing. But I do need this to get out to everybody. So, on that note, I will see everybody tomorrow. Do the 3 things you need to do. Be careful, be safe, and have a great rest of the day. My name is David Steele, and you have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.